Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and our online video picks for this week are up on our website. Every week we choose five videos from the web that we think you may be interested in, and I anchor them in a picks video. Also, we want to incorporate your video picks. Send us a link to any video you want to share. Email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. Check out this week's online video picks at wnyc.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Well, to watch the New York media, you would think the big transatlantic culture story of the last week was the New York Giants playing football in London. But here's another nominee, the Guardian newspaper coming to America. The UK's Progressive Daily has just launched Guardian America, an edition for consumption over here, where we spell color with no U and civilization with a Z. With me now are the editor of Guardian America, Michael Tomasky, who had been editor of the progressive magazine The American Prospect, and before that a Village Voice reporter. He's the author of several books. He's been here many times before. And we have from the UK Guardian, Inigo Thomas. He's culture and society editor for the Guardian America. Inigo, welcome. Michael, welcome back.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Michael, what's a nice boy like you from the Village Voice doing as editor of a British newspaper?
From West Virginia via the Village Voice. well, I was sitting at home minding my own business late last year, and I got this email from a man who is now my colleague in the next door office, Richard Adams, who said we are starting to move toward actually creating this American version of The Guardian, which they had been toying with and talking about since 2002 or 2003. And so I applied, and lo and behold, they decided I was their guy, for which I'm very glad. So here I am.
Will it be a daily here, too?
A daily website, yes. To give the history in a nutshell, if I may, quickly. The Guardian folks in London started to notice in late 2002, early 2003, that their American traffic was just going through the roof. And I think we can all figure out.
Right. Now, that, of course, was during the run-up to the
right.
Gulf War.
Exactly.
That's the time that we started airing the BBC World Service
sure.
as a daily
right.
feature on WNYC. And
yeah.
for obvious reasons, a lot of Americans, especially more politically progressive Americans, wanted to get some other perspectives than what they were getting from the U.S. media.
Right. And so the traffic went to a very high level, and then, lo and behold, over 2004 and 2005, it stayed. And so the Guardian's traffic in America is about 5 million unique visitors a month, and I read one article in last week in conjunction with the launch of GuardianAmerica.com that said that if it were an American paper, that would make it the seventh largest paper in the United States
Whoa.
In terms of online traffic.
Wow. So, listeners, do you read The Guardian? Do you read it in print? Do you read it online? If so, in your opinion, what can The Guardian do for American journalism? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. I know we've had some conservatives call here in the past and critique some of The Guardian's British coverage. You can call, too. What do you think The Guardian will do to American journalism? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Inigo, you wrote a piece about the Guardian style guide and how the American version will sometimes deviate, but not very much. Can you give me some examples of what you're grappling with?
Punctuation and spelling, mostly. The rules of the Guardian in Britain there is a style book which is available actually on the Guardian's website, and those will be applied to everything which is written for the Guardian America. Obviously, every newspaper, every publication has a style guide of one kind or another, and many people use the AP guide. Some people use Oxford University's guide to composition. But the Guardian has its own, and this is the one which we hope that the contributors to the Guardian will
So
use.
You're going to try to spread British English through the colonies here. I'm looking at some of the examples in this Guardian Unlimited article that you wrote last Tuesday. Valor with a U-R, behavior with a U-R, realize
right.
with an S instead of a Z, program ending in M-M-E, instead of cell phone, mobile phone. These are all things that you hope to preserve and spread to American usage.
Well, I'm not sure it's sort of effort in aggrandizing. it's more just
right.
That this is the
being who
the
you are
form which has been followed, and I mean there are any number of different varieties of spelling.
There's a very simple, if I may, there's a very simple and mundane technical reason for that. And I did in the summertime, I did go over to London and try to make a case to the bosses there that we should Americanize at least capitalizations. Because the Guardian lowercases everything, and I find it very maddening. So, like, State Department will be lowercase. And I tried to make the opposite argument, but they said everything will be ending up on the same website, guardian.co.uk. So once it leaves the Guardian America front page, it goes into the larger Guardian site. And wouldn't it be strange to have certain words spelled one way in some articles and spelled a different way in other articles?
So how far does this go? So State Department, which we would normally capitalize, even when writing an innocuous phrase like a State Department official, we would capitalize State Department. Same with White House. What about names of states? Those are proper names, so they still get capitalized? The W and the V in West Virginia, to take a random example?
That's written into my contract.
I mean, at least, I mean, I have worked at a publication where Cold War was debated endlessly, and whether Cold War should be capitalized or whether it should be lowercase.
Right.
I mean, is it one word or two? Subtle changes take place all the time, and I mean, obviously, a publication wants to have as much consistency as possible, and that's the primary rule of any or a primary aim of every style book is to ensure consistency.
But advice to our listeners: do not drive on the left side of the road while reading The Guardian. Amy in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Brian. I actually started reading The Guardian in 2002 when I was living in London, and ever since I've had to sort of beg, borrow, and steal to sort of still get the content here in the United States. So I'm actually very excited that now that I'm back here, I will still be able to read The Guardian and have the same quality of content and coverage.
What do you like most about it? What do you go to?
You know, I go through all of the sections. Actually, it's pretty interesting because I normally skip through, like, you know, most of the sports and all that kind of stuff. But I just find, I don't know, maybe it's just because it's the, what they cover is, it's, I don't even know really how to put it. It's entertaining, it's thoughtful, it's it makes certain things that necessarily you wouldn't think are very interesting,
mm-hmm.
almost sort of exciting, so...
Good. Amy, thank you very much. So, Michael, is Guardian America trying to fill a political gap, an ideological gap in reporting in America, or a market gap?
I think those are interchangeable things. There's a sort of political/ideological market for an intelligent publication that is a bit more open about its biases and a view of the world, and I would not say incredibly more open. I choose my words carefully, a bit more open.
Then what?
Well, then, you know, a traditional American objective, you know, the person mm-hmm. A says, person B says thing. The Guardian, you know, hews to those standards to some extent, but in terms of story selection, for example, it would be very different from the New York Times or Washington Post.
Can you give me an example, maybe from today's, yesterday's, whatever, Guardian America?
Well, we ran a story last week And this is kind of an arcane story, so we ran a story on how Republicans in the House of Representatives are working to block certain Democratic initiatives. You may remember, Brian, a couple weeks ago that the Republicans used this maneuver to block the surveillance bill that the Democrats were trying to push through. And we did a piece that really dug into the details of how those things work and how the Republicans have used that device a lot more than the Democrats used it when they were in the minority to try and stop legislation from getting through. And that's a story that was there for anybody to do, but the New York Times didn't do it and the Washington Post didn't do it. And that's an example of a story, I think, that is of special interest to the kind of people the kind of Americans who are interested in reading The Guardian. But it wasn't a story that said, you know, it wasn't rhetorical. It didn't say, you know, the Republicans are evil or anything. Right. It just presented facts.
Just had to read between the lines. Michael Tomasky, editor of the brand new Guardian America, the U.S. version of the UK's Guardian newspaper, and Inigo Thomas, their culture and society editor, and Diana in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning, Brian. I'm thrilled that The Guardian's coming to the States, obviously. I've been reading it since it was in my house since my earliest childhood, when, of course, it was the Manchester Guardian, because it's a Manchester paper originally, and it was our progressive paper. I hate to admit, we also have the Daily Express in our house for amusement. I think your editors might be amused by that. But really, it's just such a different perspective on politics worldwide. And one thing I think it will probably bring a lot of foreign news, which American readers won't necessarily have, which I think is absolutely critical in this country to have much more foreign news. I mean, The Guardian, and I was also wondering whether they're going to start the Sunday version, in a sense, it's the sister version, which is The Observer, which is a very important paper in the UK.
The Sunday version. Yeah, so Inigo, let me ask you that. Do you know, and will there be a print edition of that?
On the last question, I think Michael would be the best person to ask that question to you. But I mean, as far as I understand it, the idea is that the Guardian America at the moment is primarily the American wing of the Guardian's website, and the news will come through that way. And like the Observer, which you couldn't also see, it's also available on the Guardian's.
Yeah. There was a plan a few years ago to launch a print edition, and that went away. And now I guess it's come back as this online version, so
right.
Maybe the market wouldn't bear.
Well, you know, it seemed to them in London, I think it seemed prohibitively expensive. But you're right, they did talk about it and they did think about it, but then, you know, there seemed no point. I mean, what point would there be in launching a print edition in this day and age?
Of anything.
I don't think the print's going to exist for, you know, who knows how many years longer.
Moeen and Parsippany are on WNYC. Hi, Moeen.
Hi, Brian. Welcome to our guest for bringing The Guardian to the U.S. I'm a little bit scared. I've been reading The Guardian for, about 30 years or more. But I'm a little bit scared that once the BBC came over, it got dumbed down. And I wonder that as a regular reader of Guardian, I get this unique perspective. But once it comes to the U.S., then the commercial aspects will start influencing it, and it'll become like any other U.S. paper, what I call the Murdochization of our media, or the dumbing down of our media.
Let's see, Michael, were you at the Village Voice when Murdoch owned that?
No, that was that era came and went before my time. But if I may take the opportunity to reassure this gentleman, The Guardian is owned by a trust, and you know, Guardian America is part of that same ownership structure, a trust arrangement which insulates it somewhat from, you know, profit pressures. So that's as true in America as it is in Britain. That's number one, and that won't change. The other thing I'd say is that, you know, Guardian America exists to produce some news for this large American audience that has existed for 4 or 5 years now. So we will have, for example, coverage of the presidential race and of Congress by American reporters whom I have hired. And we will have coverage of American life and all aspects of life that The Guardian would not bother to do in London. For example, today on our site, we have a very entertaining piece by Scott Simon of NPR fame a Cubs fan lamenting the fact that the Red Sox have suddenly gotten good, because the Cubs and Red Sox used to be, you know, in this fraternity of misery. And so Scott's written a very interesting piece on the Cubs fans' jealousy. That's something
at least
that the
he's still got
Guardian
the...
would not have. But so we're going to do things like that. But I don't think that's, and I think the caller would agree, that's not dumbing down. That's a smart piece trying to bring a Guardian-ish sensibility to American culture and events.
At least Scott Simon still has the Cleveland Indians. but Michael, before you go, you've had special access, I'll call it, to Hillary Clinton over the years, ever since you wrote a book about her 2000 Senate run in New York State. And I see you got a little coup already on Guardian America with an interview with her that's made news elsewhere. You got quoted in the Post, you got quoted in the Times, including about her going so far as to promise to surrender some presidential powers to Congress in the context of declaring war. What did she exactly say there?
I would say she promised to look at that situation. I don't know that she promised to relinquish some power. That's probably slightly overstating it. But I just asked it because it's a question that I've been wondering about lately. And I'd ask Obama and Edwards, too. And she surprised me a bit with her answer. And I could tell, you know, I've interviewed her enough to know when I'm just getting the talking points and when she's saying, and in this she's not that different from any politician, but you know, when you're getting the talking points and when she's actually saying something that she thinks. And in this case, she was saying something that she thought, and she has a philosophical disagreement with this administration about you know, the theory of executive power. And she seemed like, you know, she's genuine about wanting to revisit this question. So, you know, we'll see if she gets in what she actually does. But it was really interesting to hear her talk that way.
Inigo, 30 seconds. Last word. You want to give me an example of a culture piece, since you're the culture and society editor?
I'm just thinking about this New York Times journalist called Robert McFadden, who I've been rather interested in over the years. He's usually better known for writing weather reports, but in fact, over a 40-year career, he's written about absolutely everything in New York, and he seems to be one of the most sort of seasoned observers. I mean, there's so much to write about in America, as there always is, and what one hopes to that the Guardian America will do is just produce some fresh pieces about a country which is sort of endlessly interesting. And
Inigo Thomas, culture and society editor for the Guardian America, who at least finds us endlessly interesting. Michael Tomasky, editor of Guardian America, thanks a lot for joining. Is it guardian.co.uk/America?
Yeah, that's how you find it.
Guardian.co.uk/America. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in a minute. We'll cross the channel and go to Paris and talk about Sarkozy storming off 60 Minutes last night and the larger issue of DNA testing for some prospective immigrants to that country. Stay with us.